Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Damn these Biloxi blues, it happens every night.
Every night.
And I ain't never met a riverboat dealer that could ever be a friend of mine.
I have not.
Summer heat never treats
or a
me
virus.
Kind. It leaves trouble on my mind. So I'm bidding farewell, putting in my notice, and I'll see you at another time.
Sing.
This highway does not know my name, and I don't care.
Nope.
No,
not.
I don't care. Headed my way for another. I got three good tires and a spare. Just a white line gypsy getting out of Mississippi with just enough gas to get there.
Low budget live, not so live from the low budget bar and frozen grill in Tennessee. It is, it's too dang cold, man. I don't like it at all. I was talking to a friend of mine this morning about it that lives up north that says they hate where they live too because it was like negative eight. And I said, well, you could drive south, but it's about 15 degrees at the Traveling Circus headquarters this morning. I do not do well in the cold. Can't even believe that this bottle of water out here in the shop ain't even frozen. I really can't. Everything else is freezing up. This is the podcast for January the 24th, and welcome, you bunch of lowlifers. And if you're just joining for the first time and you're like, I don't know why this bearded idiot is calling me a lowlifer, well, that's what the loyal listeners and viewers of this program refer to themselves as. So welcome aboard. If you're here just taking a peek, if you're here because you're loyal, if you're here because you're just watching because you got to, you know, you got to watch to see what I'm doing so you can criticize it or whatever. I don't know. I don't have time for that kind of stuff, but hey, I'm here for it. Get them numbers up. I like it. headed to Florida this week. Forget the cold. It may be cold down there. I don't know. It's got to be warmer than it is in Tennessee, but I'm going to be leaving a little bit later this week to head down for that Bassmaster Southern Open, first one of the year, and really looking forward to that. So be thinking about me. Be thinking about me. Be starting to, you know, hey, man, wish you luck, because I'm going to need it against that bunch. Those fields just get tougher and tougher and tougher and tougher. I keep seeing guys post on social media, I'm fixing ahead to the Southern Open. I'm like, oh, God. I mean, some stone cold killers, and they're always super tough. I think this year could be right up there with some of the toughest fields they've ever had. A lot of BPT guys fishing, some new faces coming into them, some young guys, some veterans. I mean, it's just, they get ugly, especially that Southern Open division. So I'm looking forward to going down there and mixing it up a little later this week. Hopefully I'll be able to breathe normal by then. This devil that's been in me for freaking, I don't know, man, over a week now. Just, I feel better today than I have in several days. But, man, my breath, like I just, I don't know. I'm still not 100, but we're going to get there by the end of the week. I promise you. Got to say a quick thank you to the sponsors of this show. First and foremost, StarTron, Starbright Solutions down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Sunny Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I've been seeing them guys. They've been down in the Keys. I don't even know why I'm giving them a sponsor plug because I'm mad at them for enjoying themselves down in the Keys, even though they've invited me several times and I always have something going on. Shout out to Gregor with StarTron. But StarTron, kicking ethanol in the teeth in your outboard engine, in your vehicle, in your side-by-side, in your chainsaw, in your log splitter, in your weed eater. God forbid you're having to use one right now. I don't even want to go outside, let alone have to run a weed eater. Hopefully, you're not having to do that. But if you're storing it, you're going to want to drop a little dab of StarTron in the tank to protect your investment. Ethanol will gum up the works. StarTron takes care of that for you. You just drop it in, you walk off, you forget it. StarTron bringing you low-budget life. 4 years, y'all. Five this August. StarTron, we appreciate them very much. New this year to Low Budget Live, there's lots of new sponsored things going on in the fishing industry, and I'm going to talk about that just for a second before we get to our guest here in a minute. But Baitworks, the folks at Baitworks out in Springfield, Missouri, I got me a big fat order coming from those guys right now. And yes, I did use my own code. You can use Duncan-10 at checkout. Duncan-10 at checkout. Get you a little bit of a discount. Show your love for Low Budget Live. If you're a fan, go support the show. They have a crazy, crazy, crazy selection of tackle. $50 gets you free shipping there. The prices, I had a friend of mine text me this week and said, man, I can't believe how good their pricing is. Like, it's absolutely out of this world. So get on there, check it out. I ordered several things for my Florida trip on there, but you can find anything. And if you can't find something on there that you want, shoot me a message, drop me a comment. They are trying to constantly evolve and build up their inventory. So let me know. Let the old lowlifer himself know what you'd like to see at baitworks.com. Duncan-10. Go check it. All right, last but not least, hang the banner. We're getting back in this bad boy this week down in Flo-Rida Express Boats, the official boat of Low Budget Live and the Traveling Circus, the X21 Pro with the 250 Yamaha Show and the beautiful, beautiful sea deck. Sounds like some of them lakes down there in Florida are going to be a little bit low. Oh, no. Is that going to be a problem for you? Nope. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to go beat and bang around down there in the old X21. Interesting situation down at Toho. They actually have the lock closed going out of Toho. Supposed to open back up this Friday. If it doesn't, not really sure what bass will do in that situation. It's supposed to open back up on the 28th. But if you've ever been to Toho, obviously there's a lock at the southern end that takes you to Cypress and Hatchnahall and then eventually down to Kissimmee. And a lot of the events get won down there on Kissimmee. But unfortunately, from what I'm hearing, the water is high on Toho. The lock's been closed since before December, I believe. And all the other lakes below Toho are kind of being cut off from the water flow. So there's no flow whatsoever. They're doing some work on the canal. All the lakes down there are low. So not real sure how it's going to play out. Like I said, supposed to open up before official practice starts, but I think it was supposed to open up about 3 or 4 other times this winter as well. So he's talking to Josh Douglas, J. Dougie down there. He's been there for a couple weeks in Florida doing some filming and things, and he said it's low. It's a little low. So we may be really bumping and grinding down there in the old Express, but we ready for it one way or the other. Express Boats, building excitement since 1966. All right. We have a guest today that I'm going to get to in just a minute that absolutely defines class and is the literal definition for legend in the sport of bass fishing, and I'm elated to have him on. But first, I'm going to talk about the polar opposite of that, which is classless internet commenters. Dude, I've been seeing this stuff. This time of year, everybody's changing sponsors, myself included. Like, things change. There's an ebb and flow. It's business. At the end of the day, on the fishing business side of fishing, right? Sponsors change, names on logos change, like it, names on jerseys change. It happens, right? And what gets me the most, and it seems like it's more and more common in the last several years, are people that will just pummel pros for changing sponsors. They pummel me over changing podcast. Like it's, they make fun. And it's always like, you know, oh my God, you're leaving this. And they just assume they know that the situation is great, or they assume they know. And like, I'll tell you what, if I leave one on my own, it's for just cause, trust me. It's because I don't like who I'm associated with. I don't like who I'm representing. There's a problem there, you know, for me personally, maybe not for everybody else. But if you see me leave one, that's the case. That's the case for a lot of guys. It's not just somebody shakes money at you and you leave. Now, there's a lot of that goes on too, I will admit, in the sport of bass fishing. But as far as the pros out there on the tour, I've been seeing like Chris Saldane. I saw a post last night. Wired to Fish, like, hey, he's going to 13 fishing rods and reels. And, dude, people were just dumping on him. Just like, just super negative comments about how much 13 fishing sucks. And these are people that, I don't know what they do for a 9-to-5, but they would, in my opinion, give their leg to not only have a company even know who they were, but let alone call them and say, hey, man, we respect you enough to want you to fish this product, help us grow this brand, and guess what? We're gonna get you this product, but we're going to pay you money, more than likely a lot more money than even some folks make at their day-to-day job, right? Working hard, we're going to pay you to represent this brand. Like, people that are commenting that they wouldn't do this or they wouldn't, yeah, you would. Yeah, you would. If somebody called you, you would trip over yourself. You dang wet your pants. That's right. It wouldn't matter if it was somebody with a Zebco 33 calling you. Hey, man, we want you to fish the whole tour on this. We're going to pay your entry fees. Bobby, you can get, stole that from Fat Cat. You can leave your job that you hate, and we're going to pay. Okay. You wouldn't even be able to finish the sentence, okay? But now you pound away on them keys at a guy that literally is out there getting to live most of our dreams. But I don't understand the negativity when it comes to that, like certain anglers. And I've had several folks reach out. Chris left Appears, and he hasn't announced this yet, but it appears that he's left Eagle Claw and Mega Bass as well. And he's going Googan. I've seen the post. I don't think Chris has like officially announced it, but I think that Turkla threw something up there. And you know, those guys, it's the biggest brand in fishing. Love it, hate it, whatever it is, and they got the coin. And so I think that it's, you know, for him and Trait and the family, financially, it's probably a really good deal for him. So I think if you're sitting around making a meme about Chris Saldane, you wish you were Chris Saldane. Or if you're making a negative comment, like, it's just stupid. It's stupid. And we all know my history with here recently with Turkla, but like, you can't do anything but respect where they're at as a brand. I mean, they have indeed taken over the sport of bass fish. Like, it's impressive to see what they've been able to do. Walk in a store, you won't not see their stuff. It's crazy to see. Regardless if I disagree with how they do business at times or how they go about things. Yeah, man, congratulations. And then I've seen people commenting, you know, Jacob Wheeler post his jersey and Googan wasn't on there. People are losing their minds the other way. But oh, you're not with Googan one. Okay. They probably could, like that dude can name his price at this point when you're just racking them trophies up, killing it on social media. You can name your price. So maybe he got too high. Maybe it was a mutual decision. Maybe it's whatever. Like, it's business. Nobody's ever going to tell you in a social media post what goes on. And not to break down the fourth wall here, but it is a business. It is a business. Like, people are like, oh, these guys will go do anything if somebody pays them more money. Well, yeah, you would leave your job if another job offered you some more money. It happens every day. It happens every day. So it's not always the case. Like I say, I think that it comes down to a lot of things. I think it comes down to relationships. I think people leave companies, people change, the person that you worked with, or maybe that person just changes over time, or the overall view of the company, the values, whatever, that happens over time. So loyalty is this double-edged sword in the fishing industry. I've talked about this on here a lot, and I talk about this with a lot of my veteran pro buddies, that it is a good thing to be loyal to sponsors, but also, like, I am walking proof at times that I have been loyal to a fault to companies to only get burned, or to know they don't have your back ultimately in tough situations. And that sucks. And that sucks. So, so just, like, back off. Like, if you think you need to comment something like that about how bad a company sucks and you can't believe, then here's the thing. I will say this. Megabass makes fan-freaking-tastic stuff. In my mind, I can't imagine giving that up. But at the same time, I know how the business works and relationships and things like that. And CZ's got a boat full of Megabass. He good. He'll still be slinging that mag draft. Trust me, he'll be all right. He'll be all right. And man, the 13 fishing stuff looks good. Gerald Swindle's with them now, working on some stuff. I've fished with some of Gerald's rods and reels. Little Trey's got some. It's good stuff. So just lay off a little bit. And I know I'm the first to jump on the bandwagon of critiquing or giving you my opinion. The bandwagon stuff on social media is just weird, man. There's a weird obsession. And like, I can promise you, guys like me, or especially guys like Chris Aldine, he doesn't care. Like, he's made in the shade, man. Like, I'm out here hustling, trying to do, you know, the best I can to feed my family four different ways, and doing a pretty damn good job at it, enjoying it every step of the way. And, you know, I don't have time to go through and criticize everybody's every little move on the internet. So good for them. And good for those of you that have time to sit there and do that. I love it. I love it. Hashtag mom's basement. All right. A man that will never, ever, 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 ever go down that road. Ever. Ever. This man was the first millionaire. The first millionaire. Let that sink in. The first to win $1 million in the sport of bass fishing. He won $1.6 million with Bassmaster. He's won almost $2 million with FLW, now MLFLW. He is entering his 45th season. He is my absolute hero in bass fishing. I mean, I'm absolutely blown away that I get to call him a buddy, that I have got to fish around him with him, and that I have had the pleasure of the last probably 10 years of my life getting to know this man, because I never thought that would be possible. And he is the most humble legend you will ever meet. He is the general. He is Larry Nixon, and we're going to get him on the phone right now as he prepares to head down to Sam Rayburn.
Hello.
Larry Nixon, the general. How are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm good, Luke. How are you today?
I'm pretty good, buddy. I'm cold in Tennessee, and when you and I were talking about Sam Rayburn, you getting ready to go out there, and you said, man, my stuff don't work as good as it used to when it's cold.
No. I've thrown me a couple rods and reels in the lake here in the last 4 or 5 years, and when it gets down there about 40 degrees and kind of drizzly rain and your gloves get wet, nah, I got to get out of spinning rod.
So I was talking to you yesterday, and then I was talking to our buddy Brad Knight, and he said, and you were talking to me about the spinning rod deal, and Brad said you were actually throwing up at La Crosse last year in the title deal a frog on a spinning rod. Like, you've adjusted a lot of your techniques to fit some of your injuries.
Yes, I was. I was having issues with my hands. Of course, that's been going on for some time. And I was throwing actually a little small ribbit, a Stanley ribbit.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a brand new little bitty small one, and I was buzzing it across them grass beds. And without any weight on it, that thing's a booger bear to throw on a casting rod.
Yeah, no.
You know, I'm good if the wind's behind my back, but if it ain't, no. I'm going to put it on a spinning rod and just go on.
So, but you have adjusted a lot of your stuff to spinning tackle. I know you, but you are the original dragger. That's what I like to say. You were dragging and shaky heading and wacky worming before it was cool. Before all these newfangled terms came out for it. You are the original worm guy, man. For me and for everybody else, like you are. You still weighing a lot of bass in on plastics?
Yes, sir. You know that's. That's funny you say that, and I've always fished a spinning rod ever since when I was 16 or 17 years old with an old Mitchell, and once I got into bait casting and bigger string and bigger lakes and Toledo Bend and all that, I really got really good with bait casters, but I've never forgot where I come from, and that's spinning tackle, and, you know, one of the very first tournaments that I won was on Sam Rayburn Lake. It was an old U.S. bass tournament in about 79, 80, 81. Rayburn was awful. Fishing was awful. And I pulled out the spinning rod and an old cream scoundrel and an 8-pound bed. And, of course, I didn't know how to rig it weedless.
Yeah.
You know, and me and Tommy was just kind of snatching that thing around in that grass, and I'll be thankful I win that tournament.
Unbelievable. Like,
holy cow, I can't believe I won a tournament on a jig-head worm on Sam Rayburn.
And that was, I mean, so you're talking 78, 79, 80, right around in that.
Oh, yeah.
And that was before, I think, Fred Taco Bland, who I know you remember, we lost Taco. He quote, you know, the shaky head was kind of his, I don't want to say invention, but he really, that was kind of that Alabama shaky head Lake Martin thing. So that was years before we would ever really see it come into mainstream popularity.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. That was way before Taco. Taco was probably mid-80s.
That's right.
When I met him, and you know, he showed me how to rig it weedless, and I was like, "Boy, how stupid about
you!" You're like, "Thank you." Now I can really catch him in this grass on this old scoundrel.
Yeah, well, it's been an interesting trip. So you know, it's nothing to me to switch from a bait caster to a spinning rod. If I'm having issues with an arm or hands or something, I'm going to put that bait caster in a rod box and pull out the spinning tackle, and I'll be all right.
Well, I think now, you know, spinning rods, a lot of bass fishermen like to give other bass fishermen heck for, oh, that sissy pole or whatever. But you know, you hear it, but listen, to survive in multi-day tournaments anymore, I think you better have several of them on the deck. We see it all the time with fishing pressure, with the competition getting better and better and better. But the technology of the spinning tackle, they're lighter, the braid, the fluorocarbon. Are you a big fan of that? I mean, that's increased everything.
You know, as lousy as my fingers are, I know how to tie that FG knot. By golly, it may take me a while to tie three or four of them, but I know how, and I'm going to utilize them because it's the easiest way to go. You know, heck, I got braid on reels out there that's been on there probably 4 years.
No kidding.
There ain't no sense changing braid.
No.
It don't rot.
That's right.
You know, if you don't get a whoopty whoop on it, just tie your new leader on there and go on.
My problem is I get way too many whoopty whoops. too many.
there's a certain braid that don't do that very often.
Well, I'm going to need you to text me what that is.
I've used every braid in the whole world out there, but boy, there's one of them that if you get out there and get you about some 10 or 12, and it don't never whoop you.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about that off the air then, dadgummit. No free plugs on Low Budget Live, but that is.
Are you sponsored by anybody?
No, I'm not. So I'm not.
It's Sunline.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, the SX.
It's that old yellow Sunline,
okay.
FX 12, and it's just got enough stiffness to it that the wind does not bother it.
Okay.
And but yet it still throws good, and I've used all of them, the Seaguars, I've used every braid out there. And, yeah, they're softer, but they also get whoop-de-whoops all the time, and I don't like them.
It drives me nuts, and it doesn't matter for me, some of the braids I've used, whether I'm throwing a fluke on one, a floating worm, a wacky worm, or a shake head, or a drop shot, it doesn't matter, or winding something. I'm still getting them dang whoop-de-whoops. I'm going to start calling them that from now on, too. I'm taking that.
I've tried every single one of them, and I mean, I finally eliminated all of them, and I said, well, that's it. I found the one that don't mess with me, so I'm going to stick to it.
You know what? I'm ordering like $1,000 worth of it today since you said that. I guarantee it. So this is – you're headed into – now, I know you took a little break because you had some health stuff. You're feeling better. Last year you got back after it, made the title championship, which was your 18th one. You got 25 Bassmaster Classics, 18 Forestwood Cups and titles. This is your 45th, by my math, 45th year professionally. What do you think about the competition now versus 10 years ago, 20 years ago? It's got to be getting harder and harder, right?
Well, yes, it definitely is getting harder to win. That's why you see multi-year winners occasionally, but boy, let me tell you what, it's usually somebody that's on a big-time roll. And because we got so many youngsters now that have grown up and they've got videos and everything they can watch and learn a whole lot quicker. You know, the learning curve is really short now where it was really long when I was 18 years old. And you know, you kind of learned off the seat of your pants back then. Now they already know before they get in the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes to, you know, just finding the fish. But it's what makes it difficult to me to really do good in tournaments nowadays is I usually wind up fishing the same areas as several other people. And that's the hardest thing in the world is to find a pattern where you got it to yourself. And you know, when I won St. Clair, I had it all to myself. I had a spot all to myself. And, well, I did share it with two guys off in the distance. But, you know, you can do that when you go to the Great Lakes. And you can't do it on small lakes like Rayburn. I mean, Rayburn is a big lake. But it still fishes kind of small when it comes down to the good areas and the good water where there's grass. And so, you know, the competition, they all find fish now.
They do.
And, you know, you wind up finding the same bass as other people, and then you kind of get in a rut of wanting to stay day three, day four, and you know that it's about gone, but yet you hadn't found anything else in practice. So, and, you know, when I don't find anything else in practice, I have a real hard time believing what I found.
No doubt. But you've always been good at just being a vacuum cleaner, too, I feel like. Just getting the most out of an area. And I think that's what makes the veteran guys better than even the young guys that know the electronics, that come out, like you said, they watch the videos, they know what to do, but sometimes they run around too much. And I've watched guys like you, man, just make the most of a small area for multiple days. And it's amazing to me to watch you guys work.
That's from experience and being able to utilize like a Senko, fish it a lot of different ways. You know, it don't bother me to throw one out there, turn my head, look around here for 20 seconds or something like that and wait on one to swim off with it and then ever pick it up and rig it on a Carolina rig or, you know, there's so many different ways to fish good baits and a lot of times that's what I do is just work my way through each and every day of a fish is thinking. I'm not going to say thinking, but the daily pattern.
Mm-hmm.
That is the whole trick to bass fishing. Every day, figure out that daily pattern.
And it changes.
If they ain't biting, change your technique, change your crank, buzz, just figure out what that day is calling for.
No doubt about it. And especially multi-day events, I talk about it a lot. You know, one-day events, you can get fortunate. You can land on them on one honey hole, you know what I mean? Catch you a big bag off of an offshore spot or something. But in a multi-day deal, it kind of separates the men from the boys in that consistency matters, changing conditions. You got to be able to adapt. And a guy like you that's had such an amazing career, you were the first millionaire. You've won over $1 million, almost $2 million with FLW, over $1 million with Bass. You've been able to do that. And you did it before. It's so funny to think about the mapping technology alone that we have now between Google Earth, these maps. I mean, and you were structure fishing, Larry. Like, I've read these articles. I grew up reading you on Toledo Bend and learn, and it was like daunting to me to think about being out there in the middle of that big old lake dragging a worm around on some roadbed that, you know what I mean, or standing timber or whatever. And now we show up at a lake and you're like, oh, there's that channel swing right there. There's that point. There's that high spot. You can look at it in 5 minutes, but you still are just right there all the time, man. It's got to be cool for you to see. For me, if I'm you, I got to be patting myself on the back going, they ain't got nothing on me. Because they don't, man, I just, you have been sitting out. Me and Brad and I talked about it yesterday. He goes, I don't even think Larry realizes what we all think about him and how much we respect him and the fact that he just shows back up and makes the championship. That's what he said. He goes, he just rolls up. Nah, I made the championship again. No big deal, guys. Amazing, man. Even with all the changes, you've seen it all. It's amazing.
Yeah, I've seen it all. You know, back in the day there, and we, like you say, it was painstaking slow to figure out lots of times how to fish that deep water and where the fish was. But when you got a paper map, you just do a lot of idling with a flasher and you find them little unique spots and you ain't got no GPS.
Gotta line up. Gotta get triangulated.
You ain't got no GPS to come back to that sucker. You better have a lot of good marks and lineups and you know, there's many a times I even had to fish my way into finding that sweet spot after I'd done found it once before. And but that was from patience and experience on Toledo Bend. And, you know, it just taught me that 99% of the time, most of the fish are out there. And, you know, with the exception of spring and post-spawn and then again sometimes in the fall. But there is always, always schools of fish out there to be found.
Mm-hmm.
And, fortunately, David Fritz and Mark Davis, myself, Tommy Martin, you know, they were all masters at that. And
yep. And
we had the lake to ourselves, Paul Elias, to name another
one. Yeah, that's right.
Clun was very, very painstakingly slow, and he figured it out, too. He would fish deep. But most of them, no. If they couldn't hit the bottom of that rod tip, they wasn't going out there.
The Hank Parkers and the Browers, and they're up there, and Guido's up there beating the dirt. Yeah, and it worked for them. It worked for them, too. But, man, you guys were – I remember the Tennessee River when I was a kid, 10, 12 years old, so 20-something years ago, before everybody had mapping, before everybody had side scan, before just my dad and I out there fishing offshore bars and things off of paper maps and stuff. He had grown up fishing, and it's so crazy to see – how it's evolved and how smart the fish are now. Is that something that you think, are we headed in the right direction with all this stuff? Cause it's a constant topic of with the forward facing sonar and the mapping. Do you think fishing is getting harder as we get better and better technology?
I really think what the issue here is more and more fish are getting caught. And they're getting schooled, you might say,
mm-hmm.
to depth finders noise, big motor noise, numbers of fishermen. You can see it when you watch bass on your live scope or your active target. I use the active target, of course, but you can see it when you throw to a fish and he doesn't react on it. But yet you throw to that same fish and drop it straight on his old noggin. Sometimes he can't stand it.
That's right.
That's that trip in his trigger bite, and but that's part of video fishing. You just got to learn to do that, and but it makes it more difficult because there is so many more fishermen doing that, and I think they get a little wary. I've had fish kind of run from my hickey here lately.
Yeah, I have to.
when I hit them with that scope, whether they're a bass or not. Sometimes they just kind of shag it, you know.
Listen, we were at Smith Lake for the Bassmaster Open in October, and those jokers, if you got within about 100 feet of them, those spots, they were suspended out over like 100 feet of water, chasing herring and stuff suspended. And listen, there were two or three guys made the top 10 doing it. They were so unbelievably hard to catch because I live close, so I'd been down there pre-fishing, and you could get those fish to bite. If you got within 100 feet of those fish, once all the boats got to running around, they wouldn't eat. Son, you'd cast, and they would go the other way. They'd be off your screen. It was incredible to watch, and it's the first time I've really seen that since all the forward-facing stuff came out, and I'm like, uh-oh. Maybe we're not headed in a good direction here. I don't know.
I'm gonna still fish the way I fish. I'm not gonna live and die with forward-facing sonar. I'm gonna utilize it when it's possible. And then if I'm in water, skinny water or something like that, I reach down there and turn that sapsucker off. I don't want it blowing no beam out away from my boat. I'm gonna, I'm just old school, and that's me. I'm too old. I'm not saying you can't train an old dog. I'm just saying I'm too old to train myself to rely on that thing. I fished by the seat of my pants for 45 years, and I ain't about to quit.
Yeah. Yes. But you have adopted it though. You got one on the boat and you do like it.
Oh yes, sir. And I've got her tuned up where I can go look at crappie and watch them run from my bait too. I mean to tell you now, them crappie are getting smart too now.
Yeah, they are. No dummies. Yeah. But they're the ones really suffering from the forward facing, because they get the sides knocked off of them all the time.
But, it's been fun learning everything that's come down the pike. I really don't care for forward-facing sonar at all, but that's me. And I'm that's me and being jealous of it, I guess you could say, because I can't, I'm just not going to do that and throw away everything I know. I can't do it. I won't never catch another bass.
Well,
I would never make another cup if I relied on that.
Yeah.
My spinning rod and my instincts is going to have to carry me through, and that's what I'm going to fish for.
Well, I was going to say, you've got more intuition and instinct between your ears than all the live scopes put together. and I would take that over that live scope, I'll be honest.
Every now and then I feel like I'm forgetting something, and I know I am, because when you get old, you get that CRS disease.
I hunt
all over my shop every now and then for that young bottle of water that I just opened 5 minutes ago.
So as you enter this 45th season, are you still, talking to you, I feel like you're just as passionate as you were on the first day. I mean, you wouldn't be doing it because you could ride off in the sun, man. You a bass fishing millionaire. Larry Nixon ain't got to be doing this. So you still have to be as passionate as day one, aren't you?
I love it. You know, and them kids like Brad Knight and Dylan Hayes and some of them kids that just go out of their way to make me feel good, speak to me, and be nice. And, and then I get to fish 6 days. Well, crap, fire. Why would I want to quit?
Yeah.
As long as I can launch that boat and one of them kids can carry me out there and I can go fit practice and fish the tournament and somebody can back me in if I'm having an issue, then I'm going to be there.
No doubt. No doubt about it. So no plans for retiring anytime soon then. We're going to see 50 seasons.
I talk about it, Luke, every year. Over the last 3 years, I've thought, man, I've got no business out there with these kids. And then I make the cup last year. And then this year I said, well, COVID's here. Nobody's going to be able to get motors. We can't get depth finders. Heck with it. I mean, I'm just going to retire and keep my boat. And then all of a sudden Bass Pro says, no, that ain't happening now. We're gonna do something here. Yamamoto steps up and, and Lawrence steps up and says, we'll get you depth finders. And I said, well, about January, I ordered a boat.
You said, forget retiring.
I've still got my old one. So right now, I'm set to go, and I'll have my new one by the middle of the month, next month. And anyway, here I go another year.
Here we go. Well, listen, I am very proud to know you. I am proud that I get to be in a bass fishing world that you're in, because I don't want to be in it if you're not in it anymore. So please keep going, because you make things better. I'm telling you, I said it before, it's an honor to have you on here. It's been an honor getting to know you over the years, man. It's a pleasure. I told my dad, one of the first ones, our running joke. So for those of y'all listening and watching, I work for TH Marine, obviously everybody knows that. And Larry had seen me. I worked the service crew working on jack plates a few times. And when I fished as a co-angler and I qualified to fish out of the front, and at the first tournament, I'm at the meeting and Larry goes, hey, I came by the service trailer and you weren't there. I need my jack plate worked out. So that became our running joke for years. He's like, hey, this jack plate's not working right. He can see me fishing the spot. And I'd just get in my head, man. I'd have to pull up a trolling motor and leave. But that's something I'll never forget. You know, my dad heard you giving me a hard time one time. He goes, hey, I don't know if you know this or not, but the general is just giving you a ration of crap, and I like it. He said, it kind of makes me proud of you. And I was like, yeah, I'm glad Larry Nixon can give me a hard time. I'm okay with that.
Well, I appreciate it, Luke. And, as long as everything's cool and I'm still doing all right and ain't falling in the lake. Oh, I'm going to give everybody a quick tip now. One of my older buddies, and he ain't much older than me, but he's about my age. The other day, he stumped his toe going up on the back deck. Well, he went right out over the back end. And he, of course, had somebody up at the other end fishing. Well, when he went down, he had coveralls on, rain gear on, boots on. Mm. And he come up one time, but he was under the boat. The boy in the front, believe me, if he hadn't been younger and a good swimmer, my buddy would have been gone. Because when Mike dove in the lake and went down where Frank was, and he is like, where is he, you know? And he kind of felt around him, and all he felt was the hood of his jacket because his feet had already sucked him down. Wow. And he pulled him to the top. So my story here is, as bad as you hate them, get you an inflatable jacket. Because yes. When the water's cold and you're dealing with wind, you're dealing with current, anything that can suck you away from that boat right quick, you better have one of them. Mm-hmm. And I bought me one last year just to carry to the St. Lawrence River because I said, you know what? If I fall in that river, 16-mile-an-hour current, my boat's going to be gone before I can blink my eyes.
That's right.
And so wear your life jacket, boys, when it's cold, and men and women and everybody else.
Yeah, always. You know what I mean? Always. Like, and the inflatables, they get a bad rap from people at times, but, man, just having that thing around your neck when you're moving and going and up on the front, I mean, you just never know. I fell in one time in the summer on the Hudson River, and it was in August, and a Bassmaster opened up there, and I had bibs on, and I had taken my jacket off, and those bibs filled up with freaking water. And yes, listen, sir. I'm talking about if my co-angler hadn't been paying attention in the current up there, I'd have been in a shape. And I slipped right off the front of the boat, kind of went to cast under some trees, and you know how you prop your foot up on the side of the boat, you know, you get all focused, and my foot just it had been pouring rain, and it just stopped, and I slipped right off in the front. Man, I couldn't swim. I just filled up with water. It felt like I was being pulled, you know, with anchors on your dang feet. And it was crazy. And those bills become like a parachute too, right? When you're swimming, they're just holding you back. So, yeah, that's great advice on the life jacket, man. Especially this time of year, you're right. Bring extra clothes too is another one. Always have some spares in the boat.
Yes.
Because that hypothermia
is... off the wet stuff and put you on some dry stuff.
Yes, quick.
But and even then, you got to go in because you're going to get hypothermia if it's 45, 50 degrees outside.
No doubt about it.
The boat ride will get you.
Yes, it will, for sure. I think they say you got under 55 degrees, you got 5 minutes, the 5-5-5 rule. Under 55 degrees, and you think, well, that's not that cold. Yeah, that's pretty cold on your body if you're in that water for that long. Well, Larry, I appreciate everything you've done for the sport. I appreciate you coming on, and I wish you the best of luck down there. Just make sure you beat Brad Knight's butt and tell him right to his face that you did it, please, and he'll just cry like a schoolgirl. Slap him on the hind end and say, hey, old boy, I got you again.
I still harass him over that tarp he wound up in his prop up there at the lacrosse.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the funniest thing I ever seen. He just drove it right up on the trailer, towing the tarp around in the parking lot. And I was like, man, I got to get a picture.
Hey, Brad, I don't know if you know this about Brad or not, Larry, but he doesn't really care. his give a damn is broken more times than it ain't. And I like it. We need more of that in the world. All right, Larry Nixon, be safe, buddy. Thank you, Larry. All right, there he is, the legend, the general. And if I was fumbling and bumbling around and giddy like a school kid. That's how I am every time I'm around Larry. So right there was a snapshot into our into our relationship. Is me just like, tell us another story, Uncle Larry. Oh, man. Good stuff. Good stuff on an LBL right there on a cold, cold January 24th. Hope all of you are doing well out there. Really appreciate each and every one of you that tune in every week. I mean that more than ever. The loyalty, the support, man, the kind words, like well wishes last week when I talked about being sick, that matters in life. And I know I went on a rant about negativity but man, the positivity I get from this show, from you guys, the low lifers, it's impressive. It really is, and it does not go unnoticed, and it's greatly, greatly appreciated. Out of breath. All right. Well, I will. I'll probably be recording a little early before I leave to go to Florida. The podcast for next week. Got a pretty good one lined up there as well, and you guys will be listening to that one while I'm down there practicing at Toho. Got to start rigging rods. Fixing to go do that right now. Take care out there. Be sure to hug your mama, hug your daddy. I'm going to take you out with some Biloxi Blues. Thanks again to Larry Nixon, and thanks to each and every one of you guys. And I'll see y'all next time.
See you.
Blues, it happens every night, and I ain't never met a riverboat dealer that could ever be a friend of mine. The summer heat never treats me kind, it leaves trouble on my mind, so I'm bidding farewell, putting in my notice, and I'll see you at another time. This highway does not know my name, and I don't care.